Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
It's exactly 6 p.m. here in Bonn, Germany. Hello and a very warm welcome to DW's Africa Link program. My name is Jen Nyinge.
And I'm Eunice Wanjiro. Remember, we are also live on our Facebook page, DW Africa. Do feel free to leave us a message.
Yes, indeed, Eunice. But first, coming up, Al-Qaeda affiliate group Nusrat al-Islam wal-Muslim claims responsibility for an attack on French soldiers in Mali that left several of them injured and killed four civilians.
And Ugandan government goes ahead to implement a new tax on social media users, angering many.
I see it as double taxation for me who does economics. Because already when I'm buying airtime, I pay tax on buying airtime. Social media, so I'm already paying for this internet, what I'm using.
It is killing our businesses. We were used to doing many things while spending so little money.
Well, these are some of the stories that we've lined up for you. But first, here is a chance to listen to what has been happening around the world.
I'm Crispin Mwakideo with DW News, and we begin with some breaking good news from Thailand. A dozen teenage boys and their football coach trapped in a cave in northern Thailand for 9 days have been found safe after 9 days, the government has said. Here in Europe, Belgian authorities have arrested three suspects over a plot to bomb a weekend rally in France. Two of the suspects, a husband and wife, are Belgian citizens of Iranian origin. They were allegedly planning to attack a meeting organized by the People's Mujahideen of Iran. The Iranian extremist group, which has been calling for regime change in Iran, has accused Tehran of plotting the attack. To Africa now, where security was top of the agenda as AU leaders met for a summit in Mauritania on Monday. The summit has been overshadowed by terrorist attacks. Speaking to reporters after an attack on the G5, a multinational anti-terrorism force with its headquarters in Mali, President Ibrahim Boubacar Keita condemned the attack.
Je pense à ces jeunes hommes qui sont morts pour la défense de la patrie sahélienne.
I think these young men died in the defense of the Sahel. They died on a mission of the highest importance. It was a mission both regional and international, in the service of the people and in defense of our values and our way of life.
De la défense de nos valeurs, de notre mode de vie.
Meanwhile, an Al-Qaeda-linked group claimed responsibility for an attack on French troops on Sunday. The group known as Nusrat al-Islam wal-Muslimin say the attack was a message to French President Emmanuel Macron, who is in Mauritania to meet with leaders of the Sahel region. Here in Germany, leaders of the governing coalition are holding crunch talks as the fallout on the migration crisis shows no sign of ending. Chancellor Angela Merkel, who heads the Christian Democrats, met today with Horst Seehofer, leader of the Christian Socialists, and the talks mediated by parliamentary speaker, former finance minister Wolfgang Schäuble, hope to hammer out differences on how to handle asylum seekers. Earlier on, Seehofer had threatened to quit if his position to send migrants back to their first country of registration is not respected.
I said that I would offer to resign from both posts and that I will put this through over the next 3 days and that we would have further talks to try and reach an understanding with Merkel's CDU.
This news comes to you from DW, Germany's international broadcaster. Mexico's president-elect Andrés Manuel López Obrador said today his incoming government will respect the ongoing trade negotiations on the NAFTA deal. López Obrador also said he wants to normalize ties with the U.S., which have been recently strained. NAFTA, a free trade agreement between the United States, Canada and Mexico, has been sharply criticized by U.S. President Donald Trump, who is now seeking renegotiating the deal. And finally on sports, and we head to the FIFA World Cup in Russia as the round of 16 continues. Brazil has beaten Mexico 2-0. Belgium plays Japan later this evening. For more news and information, visit dw.com or download the DW app on Apple and Google Play. I'm Crispin Mwakideo.
You're listening to Africa Link with me, Eunice Wanjiro.
And my name is Jen Nyinge. Just to remind you, we are also live on our Facebook page, DW Africa. So head there and interact with us on the stories we are covering today.
We start off in Mali, where an Al-Qaeda-linked Islamist group has claimed responsibility for an attack on French troops in the northern town of Gao that left several of them wounded and killed four civilians. The Nusrat Al-Islam Wal Muslim group, said the attack was a message to French President Emmanuel Macron ahead of his visit to Mauritania today on Monday.
Now, the French president will join over 40 African head of states and governments for an ongoing African Union summit, whose top of the agenda is the regional security. Earlier, I spoke to Paul Melly of Chatham House in London, and he starts by explaining how much is known about Nusrat Al-Islam Wal Muslim, a group that claimed a responsibility of that attack on the G5 Sahel Joint Force headquarters in Mali.
Not a lot. There is a wide range of jihadist groups in Mali. And although people can claim responsibility under the headline of a group, actually verifying or authenticating exactly who it is always quite difficult.
Now, we understand President Emmanuel Macron and Sahel states are due to discuss the work of the G5 force this week. How is Macron likely to react, given that it is not the first time that French soldiers in particular are targeted in Mali?
I think he will not be surprised. Attacks on French soldiers in the Gao region or the Kidal region of northern Mali are fairly frequent. But the bigger strategic question is, can France help the countries of the G5 Sahel accelerate and strengthen the deployment of their new joint military force? So that's the big strategic challenge of the moment, to strengthen the deployment of the G5 joint force, because it can help to reinforce security, particularly in what one might describe as the south of the north, that's to say the Niger River Valley, where there are populated areas and jihadists and also local intercommunal conflicts as well, complicating the situation and contributing in a very big way to the insecurity that also led to this latest attack on the French.
Melly, you've pointed out a very critical issue of funding. And there has been some back and forth between the UN, the African Union and the European Union on the funding for the G5 force to the tune of hundreds of billions of euros from international donors. Have all the pledges been met?
It's not clear if all the money has been dispersed yet, but it probably doesn't all need to be dispersed in one go. The most important thing is that there are proper functional administrative structures and trust fund working properly, so that as the money arrives from donors, it can be correctly managed and budgeted.
That was Paul Melly, Africa Fellow at Chatham House in London, giving us an insight on the security situation in Mali and the Sahel region in general following an attack that targeted French soldiers. We apologize, the audio was not all that. And this story has created a lot of conversation on our Facebook page. And Eunice, what are people saying?
You're right, it has actually created a lot of comments. And we actually asked the question, why can't Africa take care of its security challenges, especially fighting terrorism in West Africa, rather than depending on foreign boots like France and Germany? Abubakar Siddiqui commented saying, African leaders always depend on outside help and old leaders. I wish the young youth can take over Africa for good.
And we have this one from Prince Sayong. He says, France is destroying Africa because of its interest and only helping to recolonize Africa.
Austin Taylor is writing saying, Africa has proven incapable of handling every level of her affairs, health, nutrition, economy, security, and so on. We are just a disgrace to the human race. Thank you so much for your comments. Just keep them coming.
And moving on, Germany's government is in crisis mood as a feud over migration threatens Angela Merkel's ruling coalition. Last-ditch talks among the Chancellor's conservative bloc started about an hour ago.
On Sunday, Interior Minister Horst Seehofer offered to quit his post over Merkel's insistence on an EU-wide migration policy. His resignation could lead to the breakup of the decades-long conservative alliance. The cornerstone of Seehofer's so-called master plan insists on refusing entry to migrants who have already been registered in another EU country. Earlier on, I spoke to DW's Daniel Peltz in Berlin, and I first wanted to find out what the situation is like in Berlin.
It is a day of hectic meetings here in Berlin. The members of parliament of the CDU and the CSU, the leadership of both parties, it seems everybody is increasingly desperate to find some sort of compromise, some sort of solution to end this row between Mrs. Merkel and Mr. Seehofer. And in fact, there is still no end in sight. We learned a short while ago that there will be a meeting of the CDU, the CSU and the third partner in the coalition government, that is the SPD, at 10 p.m. this evening. So from the look of things right now, it is going to be a long night for Germany's political elite.
So how do you think this is going to end?
Nobody really knows that. It's a question that many people here in Berlin have been thinking about, journalists, politicians, members of parliament. This whole row between Mrs. Merkel and Mr. Seehofer is increasingly about emotions. It's not about facts anymore. And it looks very unlikely that both will just agree on some sort of compromise and then continue to work with each other as if nothing had happened. There is still a chance that the CSU might walk out of the government. But at this stage, that looks unlikely because opinion polls show that Mrs. Merkel is enjoying much more public support for her position compared to Mr. Seehofer. Another scenario that many people in Berlin have been talking about today is that Mr. Seehofer could resign. He apparently threatened last night that he might resign if the chancellor would not give in to his demands. So that is also something that could still happen. For the moment, we just have to wait and see how things develop.
I was speaking to Daniel Peltz, who is in Berlin, and like you heard, we don't know about the meeting at 5, but looking to see whether the meeting is going to take place at 10 in the evening.
Absolutely. Now to Uganda, and the government has gone ahead to implement a new tax on social media users, angering many who see the revenue measure as an attack on free speech.
Facebook and WhatsApp users will pay a daily tax equivalent to 0.05 cents in euros since the implementation on 1st July. There has been a drastic reduction in the number of social media users. Alex Jeter reports.
Sounds of youths who were arrested this morning as they marched towards the parliament. They were showing their discontent over the social media tax. Social media users alike feel they are unfairly taxed since they are already paying taxes for the same services.
To me, they are not okay with me because I see it as double taxation for me who does economics. Because already when I'm buying airtime, I pay tax on buying airtime. Social media, so I'm already paying for this internet, what I'm using. So I see it as not of any good to me. To Ugandans, to all of us, it's not of any good.
I only found out this morning that I was cut off and I was trying to get a client's pictures but couldn't because I had to pay tax.
This is a terrible tax. It is killing our businesses. We were used to doing many things while spending so little money.
Users have the option of paying the tax daily or weekly using their deposits on the mobile money banking system. But many are coming up with ways of how to bypass the tax. For example, Christopher Ansari, a telecoms engineering student, is introducing a VPN app to his colleagues. VPNs are tools that can help internet users to access blocked websites or encrypt one's data. Nsali says he is ready to help people evade newly instructed tax.
Since yesterday, of course, there has been a very big reduction in the number of social media usage. And I just wish that if it was possible, I could move around telling people how to go about this thing.
Meanwhile, a group of lawyers has gone to court to challenge the tax because they believe it is an infringement on fundamental freedoms of expression. President Yoweri Museveni has said before that social media is being used by his enemies, by enemies of his government, to promote hatred. He said he would find ways to stop it.
Alex Jeter in Uganda. Now, I would like to acknowledge some of you listening to us on our Facebook page. Amadu Abdul Hadi, thank you. Kobina Otutawia, Columba Sebastian Chikuni, and Chigioke Onyema, thank you for your comments. And thank you for keeping it African Link. You're listening to DW's Africa Link program live from our studios in Bonn. I'm Eunice Njiro.
And my name is Jen Nyinge. You can also listen to this program live by visiting our Facebook page, DW Africa. Still to come, Malawians at risk of contracting the HIV virus are urging the government to adopt a new HIV prevention technologies.
And looking at the World Cup, hosts Russia have qualified for the quarterfinals. Samson Omale will fill us in with more.
But Eunice, before we talk football, irregular migration along the Southern Africa route is increasingly dangerous for migrants. A general improvement in migrant care and protection and migration management capacity in the region is needed to better respond to the complex migratory flows.
Now, to address the challenges within the region, three governments, together with the European Commission for International Cooperation and Development, in conjunction with Organization for Migration, IOM, established a pilot action plan on voluntary and sustainable return and reintegration of migrants. Our Malawian correspondent Miriam Kaliza reports on how the pilot intends to address the flows.
Majas Mase and Matei Juma are 25 and 29. None of them completed the primary school level. In 2015, the two best friends left Malawi for South Africa to look for greener pastures. 2 years later, they decided to return home after life became even harder in South Africa. Mase and Juma are currently selling dried fish in the main market of capital, Lilongwe.
I was doing some piece of work in South Africa, and because I had no job or residence permit, I was never in one place. I used to run away from the law enforcers every time, and the money I was getting wasn't enough to live a good life.
Juma's friend Matthias says he does not wish to go back to South Africa and would not advise anyone to embark on the same journey he took 3 years ago.
I used to work in the shop, but the owners would lock me inside for some weeks, and sometimes when you have money, the boys in the streets would steal from you. I think I'm better off back home, and I would not recommend anyone to go if they have no skills.
Young Malawians take an arduous journey to different southern African countries, mainly to South Africa, looking for better life. In Africa, given the prevailing social and economic challenges, demographic imbalances, instability and conflict, young people travel to find a better life for themselves. However, a majority of them end up suffering even more in the countries they have migrated to. But because of shame and lack of fallback plan, they are not able to go back home. That is why the governments of Malawi, Mozambique and South Africa, together with the Organization for Migration, IOM, and other partners, decided to tackle the flows through what is known as assisted voluntary return of migrants to their original homes. Malawi's minister responsible for home affairs and internal security, Cecilia Chazama, says her country is ready to help those that are willing to return home with some skills so that they can integrate back into their communities without many challenges.
The issues of migration will always be there, but then, as it is also a case of human rights, they need to be protected. And the reason why they are migrating is they are looking for greener pastures. We have seen that with the IOM, the agreement with support from the EU to help our migrants when they return home. They should have a reason to return home for.
Ambassador of the European Union to Malawi, Michelle German, says it is vital for countries to find long-term solutions to deal with irregular migration.
Migration is a very important issue for Europe. We want to help Africa cope with the issue of migration because we know that a lot of migration takes place in Africa. Our main priority is making sure that there is no reason for young ones to migrate. That's why we are helping Malawi with the Growth and Jobs Programme.
For his part, International Organization for Migration Regional Director for Southern Africa, Charles Quinini, says they are looking to reach out to 500 migrants from each country involved and integrate them back into their communities in a dignified manner.
Migration is not a problem to be solved. It's a matter of how we manage it. The issue that we are faced with is the lack of opportunities in the countries of origin. So this pilot is just to enhance government's capacities to be able to put in place the structures, the systems, and the standard operational procedures to assist the migrants who are living outside the country so that they are able to return.
The pilot project will run up to 2020.
Miriam Kaliza with that report.
Health check.
Now, key populations in Malawi, such as sex workers, have complained of government's slow adoption of new HIV prevention technologies like pre-exposure prophylaxis, commonly known as PrEP. PrEP is a daily pill taken to lower chances of one getting infected with the HIV virus. Unlike in other countries like Zimbabwe, people who are at risk of contracting the virus are accessing PrEP after government there allowed researchers to try out the drug.
The Ministry of Health in Malawi told DW that Malawi is still drafting guidelines on prospects to roll out PrEP. According to the Minister of Health, government awaits a decision from the country's National Research Ethics Committee to make sure its recommendation on whether to roll out PrEP.
Miriam Banda is a sex worker living in Malawi's capital, Lilongwe. Because of the nature of her work, she's at risk of contracting the HIV virus. The HIV prevalence rate in Malawi is at 10.3%, according to the Ministry of Health. But Miriam says she had no choice rather than turn to prostitution.
I started this business in 2006 after I divorced from my husband. Since then, this has been my job. I ventured into sex selling so that I do not have to depend on my relationships to sustain my life and my child.
On a daily basis, Miriam meets at least six clients, taking home about 12,000 kwachas, the equivalent of $11 on a good day. Prostitution in Malawi is illegal. This makes it difficult to know the exact number of sex workers in the country. Many of them, like Miriam, don't know anything about drugs such as the PrEP, a daily pill taken to lower one's risk of contracting HIV.
I have never heard of this drug called PrEP, but I wish that my government gives us this drug because I feel that my life is at great risk.
Minister of Health Atupele Muluzi says the pills are unavailable in Malawi because the government is still developing guidelines on their usage. But in other southern African countries like Zimbabwe, PrEP is available for free in government hospitals for high-risk individuals like sex workers, while others pay a small fee. 23-year-old Skochi, not her real name, is also a sex worker from Zimbabwe.
I think PrEP works if it's taken properly, and you should have that element of saying PrEP is not a stand-alone prevention tool method. It should come up with other prevention tools like condoms, because PrEP doesn't prevent pregnancy, PrEP doesn't prevent STIs. So I think when we are talking about our 1990 targets and we are talking about ending new infections, definitely one should consider PrEP as one of the HIV prevention tools to use.
Health rights activists like Charles Nyirenda say it is high time for the Malawi government to start prioritizing on the lives of people at high risk of contracting and transmitting the virus.
It's all about how you roll out, when you roll out, and what it will cost. So as of now, you can actually see that there were issues, I think a year or two ago, about the global funding to the same source. People abuse the money and that kind of thing. But they seem to have talked that over. So I suspect that in due course, we'll have no choice but to go that route too.
But the Minister of Health, Atupele Muluzi, says the government will have proper guidelines on proper usage by the end of year.
We are now in the last mile of HIV interventions, and particularly targeting those that are high risk, for example, sex workers and, of course, other high risk groups. So there has been an issue about pre-exposure prophylaxis, whether we as Malawi should be using this, especially for the high risk populations. So PrEP is not being rolled out as of yet. We're still waiting for the recommendations of the Ethics Committee.
As health officials take their time developing guidelines, one can only hope that the process can move on quickly so that ordinary people like Miriam Banda are not at the risk of contracting the HIV virus.
Isaac Mugabe presented that report filed by Chimwemwe Padata. Now, let's head to Russia, where the World Cup is taking place, and the hosts, Russia, qualified for the quarterfinals of the 2018 FIFA World Cup. They beat Spain 4-3 on penalties on Sunday at the Luzhniki Stadium in Moscow.
Spain joins other top-rated teams like Germany, Argentina and Portugal, who have all been eliminated from the tournament. Moscow and several Russian cities erupted in streets celebrations. Samson O'Malley, who is in Russia, with more.
From the metro stations to the FanFest parks, bars and clubs, the city was in a state of frenzy as one of the least ranked team in the world made it to the last eight of the 2018 FIFA World Cup.
I don't know how to explain my feeling now. I'm so happy. It's unbelievable. It's a miracle, I think. I hope that Russia will win, but I think nobody believes in it. But we hope, and now I think my dream is come true, you know.
Some Spanish fans believed their team did not play well enough to earn a victory. Russia's Alexander Rehohin made a little piece of World Cup history on Sunday when he became the first man to appear as a fourth substitute in a tournament match during the host game against Spain in Moscow. Senegal's Football Federation, FSF, has asked FIFA to reconsider its fair play ruling after the accumulation of more yellow cards than World Cup group rivals Japan made the African side the first country to be eliminated by the new regulation. Japan and Senegal were left on the same points, goals and goal difference, but it was Akira Nishihino's side that sneaked into the last 16 at the expense of the Africans. The FIFA Disciplinary Committee has sent warnings to the Egyptian Football Association due to the breach of the media market regulations for the 2018 FIFA World Cup Russia for not ensuring the presence of Mohamed Salah in the press conference following the match between Saudi Arabia and Egypt, despite Mohamed Salah being elected as the man of the match. While the president of the Moroccan Football Association, Fawzi Elegja, also got warning for staying in the technical area before the final whistle of the match between Spain and Morocco.
Samson O'Malley following the World Cup in Russia.
And now Eunice looking on our Facebook page. It is not business as usual in Uganda because social media addicts now will be forced to pay a tax equivalent of 0.05 cents in euros if you're using Facebook and WhatsApp. And people are really pissed off with this new tax.
Yes, especially since they use social media to communicate. Now, we have reactions here. Charles Ongole John is saying, grossly unfair for the Museveni regime to levy this tax that clearly infringes on our freedoms of information. How may UNESCO, the donor partners in Germany, help to exact a counterweight upon Museveni in this unfortunate tax upon Ugandans?
Interesting. And Asidiu Johnson says, sometimes these African presidents are annoying. They want to tax everything, but you can't see anything tangible the money is being used for.
That's a good point. Now, Ronald Roni is saying, I'm told that many are also using VPN to evade the taxes.
And Teresa, who is in Freetown, Sierra Leone, says they want to reduce the use of social media in Uganda. Social media is another platform that is cursing youth not to concentrate on certain things. Do you think so?
I don't know what to say.
Yeah, because there are some people who are addicts, social media addicts.
Definitely, definitely.
And we, on our Facebook page, we also covered a story on Boko Haram with some 2,000 police officers stationed in Boko Haram hit a northeast region on Monday, demanding months of payback. Can you see that story?
Yeah, it's in an angry process, which marked by tear guns and gunshots fired into the air. President Jonathan Goodluck complained of non-payment of salaries, and people commented. Chibuike Ume says, APC Buhari regime most add Jonathan and his administration to their inability to solve Nigeria citizens' problems.
And we have this from Ken Arthur. He says, the capital of misery is the world, Nigeria.
Well, keep your comments coming. Thank you so much for your comments. I'm Eunice Wanjiru.
And my name is Jen Nyinge. Thank you so much for your time.
Bye for now.